Which he's done. Okay. Okay. How many of you have started planning for Christmas? Oh, you know, it's less than 2 months away. And if you have 2 months, if you've been in any store lately, that's not a surprise. Okay. You've got a gift list already? Food and grocery lists? People to invite? Decorations needed? How many of you like to feel in control of your plans? How many of you think you are actually in control? Oh, there's one. I know people who find their lives spiraling out of control, which causes them physical distress, shortness of breath, rapidly beating heart, panic attacks. Have you ever been in a situation where you said, "Be still, my beating heart"? I know I like to feel in control. At some point in my life, I even thought of myself as a control freak. I think it comes partially from being a teacher for more than 30 years and having a revolving door of more than 30 teenagers passing through my classroom door 4 or 5 times each day. That's more than 100 teenagers every day. Think about that. It also comes from my experiences in theater. As director, stage manager, producer, technician, and sometimes all of these at the same time. In these roles, I had to prepare a step-by-step plan for the entire production, beginning at selecting the play, which is just a bunch of words in a book, and working it through rehearsals, casting, getting everything, costume, sets, everything to closing night, and hopefully selling tickets somewhere in between. And I got pretty good at it until life stepped in. More than once, an actor became ill and had to be replaced at the last moment. I think in our own ways, we can all relate to the desire to be in control. We feel that relying on ourselves is the only way we can achieve that control. I'm sure you've heard the saying that if you want a job done well, you have to do it yourself. And so we try to live in our own strength. And the more we realize we are not in control, the more we try to gain control, and the more frustrated we get. It becomes a vicious circle. One of the most devastating things in my life that sent everything familiar for me reeling out of control was when my husband told me he was leaving. It all began with those four famous words, "We need to talk." We had two small children, and at that time, the courts awarded me support payments of $200 a month. That was a total of $200, not $200 for each child. Not only that, at that time, the amount was taxable to me as it was classified as income. I had a mortgage, a car loan, daycare expenses, as well as the day-to-day expenses associated with running a household and having a full-time job, all while living on a single paycheck, which I hadn't had to do for more than 15 years. That same weekend, my husband told me he was leaving. For some reason, I decided to attend a new church, the one my sister-in-law had been inviting me to. I'd been searching for a church for a while because we'd moved out into the countryside outside of Edmonton. I really wanted to have a community church that was close, but it kind of wasn't happening. So for some reason, I went into Edmonton that Sunday. The message that Sunday was on James 1. "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy." The only thought that went through my mind in this new church was, "You've got to be kidding." Here I was devastated. My world was crumbling. crumbling around me, and I'm totally out of control of anything that's happening, and I'm told to be joyful. As the days wore on, all I saw around me were couples. All I heard on the radio were love songs. My senses were bombarded with reminders of my new reality and what I had lost, one I had not planned, and one over which I had absolutely no control. I was also trying to put on a brave face for my children because they had no clue what was going on, and I was living in the unknown, and I just did not know how anything was going to work out. But after some time, eventually it did work its way out, and as a result of going through this difficult time, I became a stronger, more confident person. And my daughter is today the amazing woman she is because our family went through such upheaval. I know for a fact, and I've known for many years now, that if my husband had stayed, she would not be the adventurous and resilient person she has become over the years. But I certainly didn't know that outcome was in our future. During this transition time, there were many issues with my son. He became rebellious and destructive, and no matter what I said or did, there was no change in his behavior. I thought it would never end, and I was totally at my wit's end. He even went to live with my sister on their farm for a short time and attended a Christian school. Well, that didn't work out, as he got into an argument with the principal and was basically kicked out of school. It was also at this time that he was shot by his cousin. An accident on the farm, but both of them love using that fact in those games, you know, where you have to tell two truths about yourself and a lie, and they say, "My cousin shot me," and everybody thinks that's the lie. Well, it's not. Thankfully, she shot him only in the foot, and the bullet missed all the major bones. Oh, the things we can be thankful for and give praise to God. Okay, he got shot, but no major bones. Thank you. My son never did finish high school. He quit just before graduating, but as an adult, he trained as a corrections officer, and I was pleased to be able to attend his graduation in Winnipeg. He jokes now. He said, "Mom, you always knew. I always knew that he would wind up behind bars." So, we are directed to be joyful in adversity. But if we read further in James, we find a promise that accompanies this direction. The promise is, "For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So, let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect, needing and complete, needing nothing." Notice we are told our endurance has a chance to grow. That we have to allow it to grow, which means that we have to go through the adversity. And no matter how much we try to avoid difficult circumstances, we can't. Even Jesus said, "Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows." Notice Jesus said we absolutely will have troubles, but he also tells us we can have peace in them. Being joyful in all circumstances requires trust. We need to trust that God is God of his word and that he will keep his promises. We need to trust God who sent his son to be his hands on earth. Jesus said, "My Father entrusted everything to me. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry burdens, and I will give you rest." And I defy anyone here to honestly say that they aren't weary or aren't carrying any burdens of any kind. Jesus promises peace and rest when we trust in his strength rather than trying to live in our own strength. So what do we do when we are ready to turn to God's strength instead of living in our own? Psalm 46 says, "Be still and know that I am God." Before I talk about what this verse means, I want to talk about what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean stop dead in your tracks, frozen with your arms outstretched to God, saying, "Okay, God, pour it on me. I've got problems. Fix it. I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I'm waiting." No, it doesn't mean standing still and doing nothing and leaving it all up to God. When we acknowledge we can't live successfully in our own strength and that we need to trust God, our hearts can be still and we can have peace while planning our future and living our lives. In the year 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon attacked Jerusalem and carried off 10,000 Jews. Among the captured Jews were some false prophets who assured the exiles that Babylon's days were numbered and God would never allow Jerusalem to be captured. The prophet Jeremiah sent a letter to them and warning the exiles that they would be in Babylon for 70 years. He told them that instead of acting on false hopes and waiting for Babylon to fall, the Jews there were to settle down in the land, build houses, plant gardens, marry off their children, and have children themselves. In other words, get on with your life, even in adversity, and allow God to do the rest. In Proverbs we read, "In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps." It's okay to plan. We are expected to plan, but we need to be open to God's prompting as to the details. So, what does it mean to be still and know? First, it means because we know the nature of God, we can trust his promises and plans for us. And in that knowledge of his nature, we can be still in all circumstances, be at peace in all circumstances, knowing God has plans for us. And although we may not know or be able to see an end in sight, we can still place our trust in him and get on with what it is we can get on with. Get on with the things that are within our control. Some years ago, a comment made by my son sent me spiraling into the abyss of doubt. I remember it clearly. It was January, and we'd just come through Christmas, and we were talking on the phone, he in Winnipeg and I in Edmonton, and he asked me a question. He said, "Mom, why do you believe what you believe?" He's not a believer. And I realized I had no answer for him. I'm sure I mumbled some kind of inadequate answer, but I definitely had no clue in my being what the real answer was. After this, I found myself sitting in church weeping as we sang the choruses at the beginning of the service. I was weeping because I no longer knew if I believed the words I was singing. And often, on a number of occasions, I had to leave the service because I was filled with such doubt. I just couldn't sit there any longer. I put on a brave face for everyone to see, but inside I was in turmoil. It was at this time that a team from the church was being assembled through Samaritan's Purse to go on a mission trip to Laos. I decided that if I wanted to answer my son's question, I needed to place myself in a situation over which I had no control at all and totally in God's hands. I guess I was testing God to see if he would come through. I phoned the team leader, a doctor, and was told there was one spot remaining I was in. Beware of making a bold decision like this, because once I was accepted as a member of the group, it was as if Satan knew why I wanted to go, and he stepped in and put so many fears and doubts in my head that I started second-guessing myself. It was a communist country. We would not be welcome as a Christian organization, but as a medical team, we could enter the country. It was the rainy season. Poisonous snakes and malaria were real dangers we would face. Solution: buy high-top boots to protect legs from snakes and take preventative malaria medication. That wasn't pleasant. And of course, a constant reminder of all the unexploded bombs we could come across, leftovers from the Vietnam War. And I've read about rebels who were still in hiding and that a tour bus had been attacked the year before, with some tourists being killed. But we weren't going to travel that road as we were flying, so I put that fear out of my mind. Hold on to that thought. I initially thought trusting God would come as we got to Laos, but I decided to trust him with the finances I needed. And I had money in my savings, but decided not to use it. The money had to come from extra work, which I did get, and from other, had to appear magically from someplace else, which it did. So, off to Laos. We arrived from Vancouver into Taiwan in a Category 4 typhoon. We were the second last plane allowed to land at the airport. So we're stranded in Taiwan overnight. We're supposed to make the connection into Laos. There's no onward flight booked because the flights to Laos just run every few days, couple of days. So we started dealing with the circumstances at the airport. So we played games, funny games, and if all else fails, you go to sleep, right, on the floor. But Eva Air, the airline, they're amazing. They put us up overnight in a hotel, beautiful hotel. We weren't allowed to go out into the street because we didn't have visas to Taiwan. But the next day, we took a flight of faith. We were able to get from Vientiane through Bangkok. So Bangkok, nothing beyond that. So now we're in Thailand. Okay, we're a little bit further. So we're in Thailand, we're in Bangkok. We still need to get to Laos. 1 hour before a plane was ready to leave, 22 seats became available. Can you believe that? 22! Who has 22 seats available on this plane from Bangkok to Vientiane? So, we got into the airport. Once we got to Laos, because it's a communist country, we had to pray behind locked doors, closing the drapes. There were about 24 of us in this room, one little room, motel room. And after this, we drove to the countryside where we stayed and worked on a silkworm farm. One day while operating our medical clinic, a teen came in with ugly scars on his body from when he had stepped on an explosive device. This was one of the devices we'd been warned about, a remnant of the Vietnam War, or the American War, as it's called over there. A third of the bombs did not go off. Even today, one person is killed or maimed every 2 days from unexploded ordnance. Let me see. Buildings and fences use ordnance, some still live, as their foundations. Yeah, I'm sitting on one there, a bomb casing, but It's in half. It's not live. It's the most heavily bombed country in the history of the world. 2 million tons of bombs were dumped. That equals one plane every 8 minutes, round the clock, for 9 years. It will take hundreds of years to clear Laos. And we were in the middle of this. This is a sign from the mines advisory group. It was on the Plain of Jars that we visited, and as tourists, the sign basically says, stay between the white lines. We've cleared all the explosive devices underneath the soil, between the white ones. Outside the red ones, we've cleared stuff we could see, maybe. So, very narrow pathway to walk. You stay between those white lines. We were able to run our medical clinic for a few extra days than originally allowed by bribing the doctor who had been sent to oversee the Christians so they wouldn't preach. The day before we left, one of the members of our group found an unexploded mortar in a field that we had all been walking through the entire time we had been there. On the last day, we saw snakes. The very first time we had seen snakes the entire time we were there. Remember those boots? Well, I don't know if you can see what I'm wearing there on the Plain of Jars, but they're flip-flops. No one in Laos wore boots, so we didn't either. We received news that we had to leave a day earlier than planned because of protesters, the borders were being closed. And if we hadn't left right away, there was no telling when we would be allowed out of the country. There were no flights leaving in time, so we had to resort to taking a bus. Okay. Now's the time you can bring that thought out of the back of your mind about those rebels. We were now going to travel the roads that those bandits controlled. The buses traveled at night so that if the rebels fired their weapons, it was easier to see by the flash where they were, and then you could return fire at the flash. Well, that was comforting. And also that our bus driver had a rifle and a handgun under his seat. As we traveled the road, we did come across a couple of rebels, and they came on the bus. They forced their way on the bus. They had AK-47s, and they wanted cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes. But the bus driver's wife had packed some candies, and they took the candies instead. And that was a good ending, considering the access to the weapons beneath the driver's seat. When I got home and recounted these incidents and others, people would say you must have been scared. And it wasn't until then that I realized I hadn't been scared at all. I don't know whether I was just naive or whether I was at peace. I was, because I was forced to place my whole trust in God, because I couldn't have done anything about any of those things that happened to us. I found a newfound love when I returned home and a trust in God. And I still cry at the words and the songs that we sing, but now it's because I know the truth of them deep in my heart. One other aspect of being still and knowing God is that we actually do have to be still. In this world of constant access and bombardment by media, and especially social media, and all the other distractions of a busy world, we need to deliberately and mindfully take time out if we want to know God better. And it's by knowing God better and understanding His nature that we will be able to control, turn to Him, and turn control over to Him, and in return receive His peace. I went to a Young Life dinner last Saturday, and one young gentleman stood up to tell what Young Life meant to him. He was 16 years old, and he mentioned something that at camp they take, he called it an all-camp quiet. For 20 minutes, everyone in the camp goes their own separate ways, and they just let things, just absorb what's around them or think about God. Look at the trees or maybe the lake, you know, it just does something to you. But everyone is quiet. we need to create the silence. At the ripe old age of 38, I volunteered to be a counselor at a camp run by the church I attended in Edmonton. They were short counselors, and as a teacher, I had to teach right to the end of June, but I had also experience with teenagers, even though I had no experience as a camp counselor. Because I was teaching till the end of June, I couldn't attend any of the training sessions at the camp, so I arrived just before the camp started. And as I walked through the door, I get greeted by the people there. They think I'm the camp cook. Because I'm so old and mature that I must be a cook. I can't be a counselor. Because most of the counselors were university students for these high school students who were going to camp. But I was placed with a group of high school age girls, and one of the activities my group was scheduled for, we had no choice, was rappelling. That's me at the top of that cliff, the pink person. We were taken to the top of a cliff and fitted with a harness and told to step over the edge. Now, that didn't seem a sensible request to me, but I was told to just trust the system. I've never forgotten that piece of advice. When we feel like we're over the edge and out of control, we need to trust the system. And the system is to be still and know that God will be our support through difficult circumstances. But be careful, because God doesn't want us to stagnate. That's me. He wants us to grow in our trust of Him and as a result mature even more. So don't be surprised about the situations you may find yourself in when you do place your trust in the system. You never know where you'll find yourself. Yeah, that was scary. I'd like to ask you to trust me right now for a minute. No, I'm not going to leave you in silence wondering what's going to happen next. I'd like you to bring to mind something that you may be going through right now that you feel you have little or no control over, something you may be frustrated with, something you've been working on for a long time with no results, or more likely not the results you'd like. It can be something large or small. God is concerned with all aspects of our lives. A couple of weeks ago, I was coming off the ferry, well, trying to, and I put my emergency brake on and I couldn't get it off. So I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to hold everybody up. I thought, okay, what's in my control? I started thinking about this message because I was getting to be still my beating heart. I drove off the ferry very slowly with my emergency brake on, put my four-way flashes on, crossed four lanes of traffic. This is down at Dew Point, and pulled into a side road. Then in the daylight, I got down and I actually saw, hey, I now know how emergency brakes work, where the cable is, and how to get it off. So it can be something very small. So what I'm going to ask you to do, you can close your eyes if you want, or just be silent. Be still. Think about this quietly. Just be still. Concentrate on giving the situation over to God. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. God, give us wisdom to know what we can control and what we can't. Encourage us to take comfort in letting go, trusting, and then resting in you. Amen. A couple of weeks ago, we sang a song that really hit home to me as I prepared the message. Earlier this week, I was asked to let the worship team know what the subject of my message was, And I asked them if it was possible to sing the song again. But if they weren't, it was okay. I would use the lyrics myself in my presentation. So Trudy wrote back to me and said that the song I requested was the one she had already slated for our closing song today. The song is Trust in You. And as we, especially when you sing the chorus, I want you to offer up the chorus as a commitment, as a prayer, just something from your whole being, how you feel that you can turn things over to God. The chorus says, when you don't move mountains, I'm needing you to move. Want to be in control. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. I want to be in control. When you don't give the answers as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you. Thanks.